Hi, everybody. It's Tim Emerson of Kwan and Healing, and I'm here today with Catherine Penwetter, who's going to talk about systemic constellations, healing generational trauma. Catherine has been a systemic constellations facilitator for the last 15 years. She's trained in a variety of healing techniques and offers her services to individuals, groups, and organizations. She's the author of three books, Soul of the Heart, Overcomers, which is an Amazon bestseller, and Live Sparks, which is a New York Times bestseller. Catherine has been a guest on many radio shows and has hosted several of her own. And I'm so excited to have her with us here today. Catherine, are you here?
I am, Tim. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. It's truly a pleasure. I wanted to ask you if you could help at first describe me for people who aren't familiar. What do we mean by constellations?
Well, systemic constellations, I'll bring all the words together, is everything is a system. And within every system, there's what we would term a constellation. For instance, if we look up in the stars at night, we see the beautiful array of stars. And if there was disorder within the stars, then it would look a bit chaotic. And within our bodies, we have our cells in their right place. We have the parts of us, our organs, in their right place. And if those things are out of whack with each other, then we can have what is called disease. And within families, there's a certain order. And when people don't know where their place is, then we can have what's called the discord. And so systemic constellation work is about bringing order back into a system. And we work a lot with trauma and with people who have illness or people who have mental health things. And it comes as a way of explaining trauma that gets passed on from generation to generation, for instance, and we often will carry the trauma as if it's our own. And epigenetics, those who work with the genes that and the traits of our human gene code, have found that we often will carry unresolved trauma for up to 14 generations.
Whoa, that's 14 generations. So how is it that that happens? I think of a trauma as something that happens, you know, to me, not as something I'm passing on to generations. How does that transfer from generation to generation?
Well, what we have found is if there is what we would refer to as an injustice, for instance, if someone within the family died and was not honored for their death or not remembered, if a child is adopted out and is not remembered for being part of the system, if there is any sort of abuse, emotional, physical abuse, then and that's not healed, then what'll happen is it gets passed on, and it gets passed on, and it actually becomes part of the memory of ourselves. And similarly, to look at what's happening within our culture right now, there has been the term that there's systemic racism. And what that means is that from past generations, there have been beliefs, there have been attitudes, there have been traumas that have not been resolved. They've been pushed away. And so what we know is that if there is not healing, for instance, within a generation, then history continues to repeat itself until there's resolution. And so there's a tendency for us as humans to reenact a trauma over and over and over again until there's completion of the process or until there's resolution. So when I work with people who have had trauma, who have had abuse, who are dealing with addiction or anger and rage, I sense that much of what they're carrying didn't just start with them. It's somewhere within the system that they're carrying the energetic signature, so to speak, of those who came before them.
Certainly addiction is a good model, because I know there that there's a medically, I mean, there's a cellular predisposition to to addiction that's passed on.
Although folks like Gabor Mate have talked that the folks he's worked with in the field of addiction and trauma find that many people who carry addiction have unresolved trauma in them. And so they find ways to be able to balance their neural network, their biochemistry. And so it's, you know, we go into the elements of science and neuroscience and the whole pathology of what someone carries. And my sense is that it's not so much a pathology as it is a condition that is often steeped in trauma.
Right. So from my understanding, since I have a ready model there at the addiction level, then, and you mentioned epigenetics, I have a sense of what you're talking about when you talk about passing on other trauma. For people who aren't familiar with epigenetics, can you bring us all up to speed?
Yes, epigenetics. There's a stem cell biologist by the name of Bruce Lipton who wrote a book called Biology of Belief. And he was an epigeneticist who found that just because there's a disease orientation within our lifeline, cancer, addiction, abuse, heart disease, et cetera, does not necessarily mean that it will be passed. It may be passed on to you. There may be a predisposition towards it. But with epigenetics, we found that our epigenetic cells turn on and off. They're known as genomes. And I recognize I may kind of get science here, but it's really fascinating that we can turn on and off these cells that could perpetuate the syndrome of heart disease, of cancer, et cetera. And I interviewed him several years ago. And when I asked him about the point of people carrying on a disease model, he said that many times we can have a lifestyle that may advocate someone to have high blood pressure, hence heart disease, or may be in fear with cancer, et cetera. And once they become aware of behaviors or attitudes that they have, they can actually shift the genome so that the cancer and addiction itself will not necessarily take over someone's system so that they're going to be prone to dying. And it's fascinating to think that we can be accountable and we can be responsible for where our life's trajectory goes. And I've worked with individuals who have had stage 4 cancer, and they found that they were carrying the grief of an unresolved trauma in the past, the loss of a sibling, the loss of a mother, the loss of a parent. And what they found was when they were able to do their deep healing work, which was the emotional part, and our emotions carry our grief, regardless of whether or not they got better, it would depend on how far their disease had actually progressed. The shift energetically in the person made the healing, at least emotionally, physically, spiritually, shift in them. So it's really fascinating when we start bringing science into the spiritual realm of who we are. And I'm really grateful that science, such as Bruce Lipton and also the late Candace Pert, who worked with the neuropeptides within our body, that we are more powerful to heal ourselves from the inside out than what many may think. Because I think in some ways, as a culture within the United States, many folks have forgotten that they are the healers. And one thing I appreciate about you so much, Tim, with this telesummit that you're doing, is it's the remembering and the reminding of individuals that we do heal ourselves from the inside out. And it can be very empowering to know that we will not be a victim of our genetic code.
You know, it's ironic that literally right before this call, I just finished a blog post talking about the abundance of healing, talking about exactly this issue. When you were describing the science I was reminded of Buddhist teaching in the Dhammapada that everything flows from mind.
And there's so many different approaches, be it from Buddhism to, there's just many different ways to go to how we can move through our healing. It's there, and the ancients, the indigenous and the elders who have since crossed over have pretty much said the same thing in a language that most everyone can understand, which is heal thyself. And I really sense that where we are right now within our culture, and we could even say globally, that there has been a lot of unresolved trauma and a lot of unresolved grief. And each and every one of us within our own Achilles is being triggered through an unresolved trauma. And if we truly do believe that the reason we're all here right now is to heal ourselves from the inside out, it's really an amazing time to be alive if we're able to move past the fear of media and what we're seeing in the outside world, you know, to really keep going back into our hearts, back into ourselves, through meditation, through Buddhism, through any sort of vehicle that will enhance one's inner awareness and insight.
It's just really fascinating to me, the correspondence is here. Everything that you've just described, which everyone will recognize as things we're going through culturally right now, is to hear the way that you described it reminded me so much of my Taoist teachings, where absolutely, you know, from the ancients to the I Ching, as everything flows from the inner to the outer manifestation. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that we do the work. And fascinating. You wrote something in an email you sent me that I want to bring up, as long as we're on a philosophical bent here, that reminded me of something else. It's been said that the peace of the dead is dependent on the living, and the wellness of the living is dependent on the dead. This reminds me so strongly of James Joyce's novel, Dubliners, especially the last story, The Dead. And throughout this novel, and especially in the last, the dead are more alive than the living, and the living are more dead than alive.
Right.
I wonder your thoughts on this.
Well, I do an ancestral meditation where the image is that behind us are all those who came before us, father to the right, mother to the left, and on down the line. And we are our fathers, we are our mothers, we are all those who have come before us. They are within our genetic code. We are the ones that we have given our hearts to. We are our children, we are our neighbor, we are all of that. And it's not just a cliche to say that within me is everyone and everything that I've ever given my heart to, or who has imparted their love and their wisdom into me. And so with that being said, when I'm trained as a counselor, I have a master's degree in social work, and have found that within traditional talk therapy, which talk therapy can be very, very helpful, although sometimes we can get very attached to the story of who we think we are and may have a million page documentation on why it is that we're so messed up. So each person we meet, we can say, this is why I'm like this, because of what my past was or how I was treated. And so the approach that I use with, for instance, systemic constellation work is the recognizing that I am father, I am mother, and that any kind of condition I have, more than 80% of what I present or what the clients present themselves with as issues or problems are systemic and not psychological. So if we're raised within a family where we unconsciously take on the beliefs, the attitudes, the traumas, the abandonment, et cetera, unless we have conscious awareness to to put down the burdens that aren't ours, we will continue to perpetuate the trauma. And the comment of the peace of the dead is dependent on the living, and the wellness is dependent on the wellness of the living is dependent on the dead, is when an individual does their work from the inside out, when they're able with a compassionate, loving heart, recognize that father, mother, whoever it was that raised them, was doing the very best they could. We become the little ones. We are put into what we could refer to as our place. Many times when there is unresolved trauma, parents are not able to show up in the fullness of who they are. If there's mental health issues, if there's physical issues, if there's military involved, if there's clergy involved, there's parts of a parent that energetically turn their backs on the children. So then the children become parentified. They become the parent. And then they go on into their life carrying this paradigm, this unconscious energy with them, where they keep attracting familiar people, familiar situations. And the stem word of familiar is family. So until we come to the part where we can recognize that we're carrying that which is not ours, when we do our healing of bowing deeply to father, mother, I am the little one, you are the big one, and we put back the energetic burden we've carried, then that enables resolution, healing, forgiveness, and compassion to go up through the generations and then seven generations forward. So I've often, the people who choose to work with me are often the ones who don't know where their place is. They tend to be highly sensitive. They tend to not always be successful in relationship and not knowing how to walk this world. And when they're given the opportunity to put down burdens through a beautiful ceremony, through ritual, through witnessing, they can then pick up their greatest gift, which is the gift of life, and knowing that there is love within them, otherwise they wouldn't be here. So what I step into the realm of shamanic, being a shamanic practitioner and also being a spiritual practitioner in that walking in between the worlds and it assisting and guiding people to be able to move out of their little self of feeling like the little one who didn't have a voice into a person who recognized father, mother were doing the very best they could. And when we make the proclamation, I am the little one, you are the big one, I take you exactly as you are, there's the healing that happens. And I'm certainly not denying people who have had excruciating trauma background. I myself had early loss. There was emotional trauma that happened. I left home when I was 17. And so I'm not speaking from the place of not recognizing and not honoring people's trauma. It's something that so many of us carry. It's being able to come to the place where we can truly begin to live our life with joy from the inside out, as if we're filling up our hollow body, we're able to stand up with a strong backbone to live our life well.
So this is really interesting. So things that I would myself would think of in terms of, if I don't resolve something that's going on, I'm going to keep carrying that into new situations. And if I'm understanding correctly, what you would suggest to me is like, Tim, the reason these things are familiar is that this is, in fact, family patterns that you've been carrying around and that that, in fact, needs to be resolved for the good of the system.
Right. Yeah.
As well as I was, you know, when you were mentioning that 80% of the problem is systemic, not psychological. Is, you know, again, this the really interesting parallels. Albert Deming, the management guru who got Japan back on its feet after World War II. Is famous for saying that 85% of the problem is in the systems, not in the people.
Yes, yeah. Because we have, if we looked within a family system, for instance, we have an ego of our system and we have the soul. And the work that I do with systemic constellation work is more with the soul because it resonates, the language resonates with me. And the soul has us, we don't have it. So within the soul, there's a consciousness. And when families take on the consciousness of abuse, and someone within the family says, no more, I am not going to do this anymore, in many ways, they're like the black sheep. They get excluded, yet their misbehavior, so to speak, will often create resolution within the family. And so the trauma or the abuse no longer needs to continue perpetuating. When I think of veterans who are coming home, many veterans from present to past, many of them have energetically turned their backs on their families, looking out at their fallen comrades who have not been honored for their sacrifice. And we see this within Native American cultures where there's been so much sacrifice, hence a lot of addiction, a lot of suicide, and we're seeing that as well with the veterans. Rather than telling a veteran, thank you for your service, which many of them, you know, it was appalling with what many needed to do, instead saying, welcome home. We welcome you home. And honoring that part of them that may very well have lost a part of their soul. And we can look at the military as being a family, and we can look at the clergy as being a family, and mental health, people going to institutions is like a family. So that's that point where people turn their backs on their families. And it's so apparent right now with our veterans. It's been going on for a long time that there's varying degrees of them being welcomed back. And I think talk therapy, again, will only take us so far. We energetically do need to go into the realm of the body. Peter Levine's work talks a lot about how animals, when they get traumatized or when they have post-traumatic stress, which happens because we're alive, it happens to everyone. When it happens to animals, they shake it off. When us humans, the two-legged, when we get traumatized, there's often what is called the immobility response, where there's the collapse, there's a freezing, because it's not safe to fight back, it's not safe to flee necessarily. And so that's the part where the trauma keeps getting reenacted over and over and over again in order to shake off and to resolve the trauma. So it's really fascinating, again, going to the animal kingdom or going to nature to see how nature heals itself and how animals heal themselves. And so post-traumatic stress only becomes a disorder when it's coupled with helplessness.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, even much milder things. I remember years ago a doctor telling me that I was in my 20s, so he's trying to get me to slow down. But he said, you know, that when a dog has an ulcer, it goes under a tree and sleeps for 3 days. When people have ulcers, they take a handful of Xanax and push on.
Yeah. And we've become a culture that pharmaceuticals, feeling a little anxious, take a pill, and feeling depressed, take a pill. And while I recognize medication can be helpful for folks, I like to see if we can go to the core of what's going on. And it doesn't mean regurgitating things that happen, because I know, for instance, working with veterans, the last thing they want to do is recall in their waking life. You know, it happens all the time where they get triggered and are hypervigilant. Instead, finding a way to recognize that everything that an individual takes on a belief, an attitude, a behavior, an addiction, whatever, its intention for us was for our highest good, which was the survival of ourselves. In overuse, it can cause harm. So when working with somebody, it's the honoring of the cleverness and the resourcefulness and the resiliency of the human spirit to live, and how can we approach someone to allow them to see the gift of what they're carrying, because within our life, right next to us, is our gift. The constellation work often talks about, within the soul's context, that we're born with a fate or circumstance. My fate was that my sister died when I was 7 and she was 4. I lived much of my life thinking that people who I loved were going to leave. And from a psychological profile, I continued to perpetuate the pattern. It wasn't until I was able to put down that grief and to go deeply into that part of me that actually wanted to join my sister, I was able to recognize that right beside my fate, my grief, was my gift, which was having an open heart, being compassionate, being empathetic. So it's really lovely to be able to work with someone and applaud them for how well they are doing. And I know sometimes we live in such a discouraged society, and when people are discouraged, they often misbehave. And so how is it that we as practitioners working in the realm of emotion enable an individual to see the true resiliency and the resourcefulness of who they are, and to bring that heart into them to know that it's their greatest ally? So it's a beautiful, gentle practice of helping people literally come home, and coming home is to their heart.
I was curious about something you mentioned earlier. Just thinking about some things that I would normally say that I'm rethinking, given what you're sharing here. So, for example, I might my paternal grandfather, who was a dairy farmer with an eighth grade education, is a very much a part of who I am. And you would, I would guess, would say like much more than literally than you think, Tim. And I'm also wondering years ago I drank away 10 years of my life, and as far as in my family, there's no immediate alcoholism, but if you go back a couple generations, there are great aunts and great uncles here and there. And, but it wasn't something that anyone ever talked about.
Right.
And because you didn't do that. And I'm wondering if in healing, and overcoming my own, if you would say that actually helps to heal the family.
I believe it does help. It's interesting, as our culture, many people feel like they're solo, that they're on this journey by themselves. You know, the individual person driving in their own car, I know I do it myself, but that whole autonomy, that part of us that feels like we're not connected to anyone. There are so many people that are floating around that feel like there's no one in their lives. And so the quantum physicists have said, there's a term called quantum entanglement, that we're all deeply, deeply connected to each other. And as you do your own level of healing and sobriety, you do heal those that you resolve those who come before you. And I've often wondered, because we're like a spider web, an individual or you, for instance, doing your own work of recovery and sobriety, gluing up or resolving that part that may have felt disconnected or not knowing where your place is, or perhaps a loyalty you had to family. Sometimes we can be loyal to a family member who had an addiction, and we're all addicted connected to something. Some are just socially more acceptable and have a tendency not to cause us as much harm. There can be the loyalty to someone who had the addiction as our way to atone ourselves, to bond with our system. And so as you have done your own recovery, it lightens your heart in many ways. And I've often wondered, is it because we energetically shift our vibration? You shifted your vibration so that you're seeing the world and being in the world in a different way? Or is it because we actually are like the tiny threads of a spider web and our actions profoundly affect all those around us? And this is when we get into quantum physics, where if anyone knows quantum physics, if you think you understand it, that's the ego saying that we do, because it is such a phenomenological in that you can't wrap your mind around it. So,
well, I would share something that I've told very few people, which is right at the height of when things were really the worst, or I guess the bottom, mm-hmm. really. What actually happened was my dead grandfather came to get me.
Yes. Yeah.
I can tell you right where we were. I can see him just as we were standing face to face.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing that. That's where in indigenous cultures, the ancestors are honored and bowed deeply to for their presence. And they are needing their own resolution, their own healing. And they are there, be it within the breeze, being within a vision, a dream, a person coming up to us and saying something that a grandparent, a beloved grandparent or auntie or whoever said, is a reminder that we are not alone on this path. And I'm grateful that he came forward to you and that you adhered and was able to welcome his blessing.
I have to tell you, I feel a little bit appropriately called out, because I often, I'm a solopreneur and I spend a lot of time interacting with people, but also by myself working on things. And I do have mm-hmm. that feeling of driving in the car by myself, doing things by mm-hmm. myself. And yet I know from my healing work, it's one of the first things I learned, is that we are never alone. There's mm-hmm. you start doing the healing session, the room gets crowded quickly. And people start telling me all the, my grandmother is here, and often I can sense that there's certain,
mm-hmm.
Like electricity.
And I think we're really moving into, with the solidarity that's happening and people speaking up and people supporting each other, I'm really trusting that what we're going through right now with all the polarization, that there is something so much bigger happening. I mean, the shadow totally is in our face right now. And the shadow, as you know, with the work you've done, if you keep pushing the shadow away, it gets stronger and stronger. And what it really wants is I believe, my sense is bowing deeply to the shadow, because within the shadow is our greatest gift. And if we can recognize that everything that has happened to us is not to punish us and not to make us feel bad or not want to be here, it's to help us move through to a place that is so much elevated, so much more elevated than what we may recognize. I learned the ancestor meditation from a shamanic healer down in South America, and she said when she works with clients, she remembers that those who came before her are behind her, and it gives her the backbone to stand up in this world. And she recognizes that many people who she's worked with don't necessarily have that sense. So it's invoking and welcoming to bring the ancestors behind us. And I've worked with people who have not known their ancestors, or people from other countries who feel displaced here. And when the image of the ancestors is behind them, tears come, and there's that sense of not being alone, and the sense again of turning and bowing deeply, having the head go below the heart to show that the head is subordinate to the heart. And there's a softening that happens, and it's a relaxing to know that we don't have to keep fighting and keep struggling.
You know, when I was a music performance student, one of the tricks I used to do to try to get ready for the rigors of the professional performance and competition was when I thought I had a piece really, really well, I would put the composer in the corner of the practice room and play it for the composer. And I'd, all of a sudden you hear all kinds of things you never heard before that need addressing.
Right. Yeah. That vulnerability.
Much of this reminds me too of Campbell's The Hero's Journey.
Yes.
Of the, you know, the son redeeming the father, or, you know, the atonement of the father. Like, these are, mm-hmm. the obstacles aren't to punish, but to give you the gifts that you need to proceed, and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really such a different way. It's such a different way to look at life, to recognize. And there's the biblical term that the sins of the fathers get passed on to the sons. And the person who coined the phrase systemic constellation work, his name is Bert Hellinger, and he's from Germany. And he brought in the principles of Virginia Satir, who's the grandmother of family dynamics, and also Moreno, who does psychodrama. And Hellinger was a Jesuit priest that actually went and lived with the Zulus of South Africa for 15 to 20 years. And, you know, speculation, did he go there to convert them into Catholicism or Judaism? Or was he tremendously impacted by living within the indigenous, who know where their place is, who are honoring of the ancestors? There's the initiation that happens with the little ones who get older, and for women becoming mothers, etc. And he brought that work back to Germany, actually during the time of Nazi Germany, and believed that if a victim could have compassion for the perpetrator, trusting and knowing that the perpetrator had been harmed themselves, that not only would it help free the victim, it would also free the perpetrator. And when I look at how we are in this culture, for instance, in regards to things that have happened to victims, or 9/11, the subsequent tragedies that have happened here, how it's often an odd phenomena when someone can actually have compassion for the one who caused them harm. And it reminds me of the Mennonites years ago, when somebody came into their village and went into the school and killed many of the children, and the shooter was then shot. And the Mennonites ended up going to the funeral of the man who had killed the children. And that is the sign of compassion. And when I work with people who have been traumatized and continue to live that trauma over and over and over again, or women who have been violated and continue to repeat the violation within themselves and the relationships, it's an interesting noting to say, are you willing to begin to work on being compassionate, you know, beginning with the tiny steps of, are you ready to put this down so that you can live your life well? And so the beauty of this work is working with someone to bring them to the space of being almost public introspection, of seeing their own life and being validated for what they've always known to be true, the secrets in the family or the ill feelings they had or the recognition that underneath the father who beat them or the mother that may have abused them, that they themselves were wounded. They themselves carried the trauma. They themselves were the little ones. And how can we move as a culture and as a species to begin to be compassionate? And as the Dalai Lama says, compassion is that beautiful equalizer that recognizes that I'm another you and you're another me, and we share the same breath, the same mind, the same heart, and the same wounds. And we are now at a pivotal place within our culture and globally to, I believe, to really start looking at how we're living our lives and how to empower ourselves to let go of the trauma and to resolve the trauma so that we can live in love and we can have our lives.
Nice. I have an acquaintance who, a few years back, his daughter was killed through the actions of his son-in-law. And I remember somebody asking, you know, obviously he was very, very shaken up, and somebody asking him, how can you just go on and forgive him? And he said, if I don't forgive him, I will never be free.
Yeah. Oh, and boy, one of the biggest nightmares I know is being a parent myself. One of the thoughts, you know, how does one go on when they lose a child, or how do we move forward when a heinous crime has been committed, and how do we recognize that there's love here? I keep, you know, I say that word and not, again, as a way to be trite. What I know about love is it too is a beautiful equalizer. It can help stabilize and equalize all emotions. And how are we able to stand up with a loving heart and be courageous and fearless? And one person told me when they had lost a loved one that it's not so much the person they missed, it's the energy that they miss, the vibration of the individual. And I've worked with mothers and loved ones who have lost ones and who have turned their back on life wanting to join the ones who have crossed over. And how can we remember at a level of our high self, of our higher self, that even though someone we love has crossed over, they're still within us, they're still within our breath, and they're still within our hearts. And it's definitely not a time for cowards right now. I mean, it's tough right now with so much happening to keep getting up over and over again and trusting that there is something so much bigger and that there is love here.
My friend Mark Silver at Heart of Business.
Yes. Yeah.
He's a Sufi, and he shares frequently that something his teacher says is that, is there love even here?
Yeah. He's a beautiful man. I know who he is. Yeah, that reminder. And again, we can say words that in the face of a tragedy, we can say words that often will slide off like Teflon. And reminded of the seven spiritual laws of success, Deepak Chopra's work of recognizing the giving and receiving in loving, conscious ways. And how can we be of service? How can we remember that there is love here? How
can
we remember that?
I remember one day, Mark has two young sons, and whatever was going on, whatever, predictable, but, you know, conflict going on with them at the day, I was teasing him, and I just said, Mark, is there love even here? He goes, no, our living room is the one place in the universe where there's no damn love.
There's no damn at this moment. Yeah. Yeah. And I know he was kidding.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So what can, for people listening to this, it's you know, we have a better understanding of what it is. So what can people do with this at home to start to look at their lives or their issues or their situations, and how can they move forward from here given what we've learned?
Well, again, it feels like it's truly the courageous person who stands up and is willing to look at their life, to recognize places where there may be shame, there may be remorse, there may be guilt, there may be different behaviors that don't serve them anymore, to either find someone who can guide them along the way or to begin doing their own journey of self-forgiveness and compassion, and to be able to shine the light on the parts of oneself where there's shame or there's some types of amnesia, to really recognize that each and every one of us has, again, been given the gift of our healing. So I think it's really looking at oneself in the situation, as Eckhart Tolle says, there are no problems, only situations. How can one learn to listen deeply to the places in their lives that don't feel like they're working anymore? I think of the energy of the eclipse and how the full moon was just a few nights ago. It brings up things in people, and it's like we have such an amazing opportunity right now from those who came before us, the upper world and all the allies that are invisible and visible, to help guide someone to find either the right practitioner or the friend or the neighbor or within themselves, to know that the journey of the courageous journey is one of transparency and one of courage. I know in our book in Overcomers, I shared about the loss of my sister, and I shared about the times I didn't want to be here and the various addictions that I took on in order as a sensitive to stay. And it's when we can learn in a safe context and with safe people or with a safe counselor or practitioner to be able to talk about these areas that we may be ashamed of, there's something so liberating about it. And I'm sure you found, Tim, with being able to openly talk about your sobriety, certainly with discernment to who you talk to, that's discernment is also important, that there's more and more of you shows up. And more of you is a beautiful representation of others who take in the energy of who you are and can see the vulnerability that you display. And I guess part of it is knowing that we are not given more than what we can handle. And again, that's not a cliche, that we're not being punished, and that now is the best time to begin to unveil and begin healing those parts of ourselves. It's interesting, we talk about mind, body, spirit. Very rarely is the emotion put in there. And there's a beautiful man by the name of Michael Brown, who's from South Africa. And he talks about segments of seven, and that the emotional body from the ages of 0 to 7 hold our grief. From the ages of 7 to 14, it becomes our physical body, where patterns of our 0 to 7 begin to come into what we would call our unconscious. And within our physical body is our mental body, rather, from 7 to 14 is our fear. And then it going out in the world, it comes into our physical body, where we begin unconsciously carrying the patterns that we took on as little ones, that's where our anger lies. And if we can tap into the emotional body to be able to start resolving our grief and our trauma is a wonderful way to start living our life. And my sense is we have so much work to do that it's imperative that we do our deep, deep work so that we can be of service to those who are struggling to get back up again.
Wonderful. And in fact, one of the things that we'll be addressing in this Emotional Challenges program is how to use, as Buddha suggests, how to use the mind actually to help to understand and control and heal our emotional body and move forward.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And I'm always struck how much we overlap. It's, another participant, Grant Connolly, mentioned the other day that it takes courage to be yourself.
Yes.
And, for those people listening who aren't aware that when I got the idea for this program in a day and I put it out there and all the participants jumped on it within 10 days. It was like we were one organism making this decision jointly. It's really fascinating.
Well, and it sounds like you have a beautiful lineup of people who are courageous doing their own journey. And I think of courage as being the French word courage, which from the heart. To the leading from our heart. And that is our greatest magnifier, is our beautiful, beautiful, untethered heart.
Wow, we covered so much.
No, it's time for a nap, and you're still
yeah.
on.
and also for people that are listening, we're actually recording this. It's August, so the lunar eclipse and our solar eclipse on August 21st hasn't happened yet. That's what we're talking about there. So we're from the future.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Good. I really appreciate the opportunity to be in dialogue with you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, thank you. I've learned a lot. It's one of those things that I kind of sort of knew what it was, but not really.
Yeah, and what's amazing is it's not, constellation work is not just a word. I mean, everything is a constellation. We're in a constellation right now. And at any given point, we can resolve, we can do anything within the living constellations that we walk around in 24/7. So it's not some woo-woo thing. It's everything's a system and everything has a constellation within that system. And looking at it from that perspective, it's really empowering to recognize. When I was listening to a talk on systemic racism, one of the speakers said what we can do, because each and every one of us is racist, whether we want to admit to that or not, to varying degrees. And whenever we get triggered, and this is similar to the question you asked earlier, when one gets triggered, stopping for a moment to breathe and to notice where in the body it's happening. And where's the compassion and where's the honoring and where's the accountability and responsibility to do it a little bit different? Because there are no missed opportunities. Every moment is an opportunity, and every opportunity has a choice point. So get to put on our big boy and girl pants and emotionally become mature.
Right. Somebody's got to be the adult here, and apparently
that's right. That's right. Yeah, and help nourish our little ones that are acting like 0 to 7 year olds. You know, how do we coddle them and also help them to know that they're going to be safe, because so many people are in fear right now.
Let me ask you about another couple of sentences you sent me about the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Systemic constellation work is a subtle and profound approach to uncovering unconscious and hidden patterns of trauma and bringing them to conscious awareness. Within the conscious awareness, true resolution and healing can occur. We can only heal what we can see. That's a beautiful sentiment. So how do we bring out these things that we're not really aware of so that we can see them?
Well, the work I do with individuals and within groups is listening to what their various patterns are. And from perspective, for instance, of Bruce Lipton's work, he talks about, again, more than 80% of how people operate is unconscious. We go like into a trance state. And in some ways, when an individual chooses to look at a pattern, such as overeating or drinking or anxiety or depression, to one look at the brilliance of an individual to bring a trait in like that. Depression, when we think of the word depression, is totally depresses the body when it's not safe. And overuse, again, it can cause harm. When we can begin to slow our life down enough to recognize a pattern that reaching for the extra cookie, and instead from, you know, Buddhist perspective, it's like, oh, curious. Here I am reaching for yet another cookie or a drink or a pill. Isn't that curious? Even though somebody may continue to perpetuate the movement, it's bringing the subtle awareness to a trance state. And it can be difficult at first to begin to notice the unconscious patterns. But once again, when we become aware of something that we do so habitually, because so many of us have been habituated to do the same thing over and over and over again, which, what is that word? Oh, yeah, it's insanity, that we do the same thing over and over again. And it's when we slow down long enough to notice what we're doing, then we can begin to bring resolution. And again, we keep doing the same thing over and over again, and there's no resolution. I don't know if I answered your question.
I think so. When I'm working with people on raising vibration, one of the things we start with after grounding is looking at the physical. And we frequently say things like, we manifest our physical environment. But rarely do we look at our physical environment and hold our feet to the fire and say, how am I doing?
Yeah.
And
I know that internally, what we see in our outer world is a result of what we're carrying internally. So if I have a pattern of being unconscious, if we don't think our unconscious is controlling us, take a look at one's life. And so, you know, that in and of itself is really a stark statement. Like, whoa, I have created all this. And it's like, but life doesn't happen to us. Well, life happens while we're busy doing other things, but it's what is going on inside of us. And so I love this word. It really would behoove people to slow down enough to notice what the repetitive, you know, 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts per day that circulate throughout our minds without us even being aware. How do we go into slow motion and really begin to notice and just have little chunks of time?
Right.
Coming home, if someone goes to the liquor store every day after work, slowing down enough to pause and think, whoa, how is it that I'm doing this? Wow, okay, it's a habituation, it's a pattern, it's unconscious. Now I'm going to give some conscious, I'm going to bring it up to the forefront so I can actually look at it, because we can't resolve things unless it's in front of us, unless we bring it up and out and have the courage to look at it. Even if it's for a second, something shifts within us.
I once heard an associate say, he had a room full of people, and he had them write down your priorities, and they wrote down all what they thought their priorities were. And he goes, now write down what you did, so what you've done so far today. And then they wrote down what they could recall doing today. And he said, okay, at the top of the list of what you've done today, at the top, write my actual priorities. Those are the things. Those are your priorities because they're already done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always interesting when you invite somebody to do something and they say, oh, no, no, I'm too busy. Yet if it's something that they really wanted to do, you can bet that there would be time.
Right.
So all those endless emails.
Right. Richard Branson and I had the same amount of time, and yet somehow he seems to cram a lot more in.
Yeah, and are we human doings or are we human beings? And I love the saying, slowing down to the speed of nature, because nature gets everything done. And similarly, when we're working with uncovering our unconscious, I think of that huge iceberg, you know, they show the top and then this huge amount of iceberg underneath the surface. And it makes it sound like it's so big and it's so not manageable. Yet what I found is that when I slow down enough to notice, oh, look at this. It's not so huge and it's not so massive. And yet we live in a pseudo attention deficit disorder society where people are moving so friggin' fast. It creates manipulation it creates people splitting apart, and that splitting apart creates manipulation, which a lot of folks are feeling manipulated and out of control right now.
It's in both Zen and Taoist, at high level meditation work, this is the work, is to slow down and notice that it's not that we stop our thoughts, but like you said, you slow down enough to notice.
Yes.
And have the space to be separate from it. And vibrating between the two, and according to the according to the Zen masters, it actually happens 72 times a second. That's a lot of slowing down.
Yeah, that's a lot of slowing down. And people many times think that every thought they have is true, and it's not. If I have a thought, that's not necessarily true. It's my own
configuration. I love that. Don't believe everything you think.
Yeah, and change the way you're thinking. Yeah. Yes, no, yes, no. I've been working with someone who has a eating disorder, and it's fascinating to see the power of the mind and thinking that the mind is our servant and or our master. And how do we put our mind so that it goes off on what it's supposed to do, which is figuring things out, not displaying us flat, you know, with telling us how bad we are. Instead, it's our servant and we're its master, and it's reprioritizing, as you were saying, to recognize who's in control here and not feel powerless. Who needs us when we have ourselves?
And so we can connect those stars into a new system.
Yes, we can, into a new constellation, and I see it happen all the time. And the beauty that I found is that I've worked with people 3 to 4 times, and they have results because they're the ones who are doing it, and it's not looking outside themselves for someone to find the solution. They, within themselves, are the solution, are the gift. So
it's funny. This is a great place to wind up. It's just, I remember, you know, from early AA days, you know, when everybody goes around, they say they're, I'm Tim and I'm an alcoholic. And this one guy always said, I'm an alcoholic and my problem is Bob.
That's a good one. Yeah. And even saying that you're something over and over again, you know, there's in some ways controversy whether we keep saying we're something, I'm an addict, if that perpetuates an issue, or, you know, a part of someone is an addict, but that's not the fullness of who they are.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, and whatever.
Of course, that's the mental approach. If that
yes.
also is a reminder that, no,
right.
you can't have just one drink, then it's anyway.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been enlightening.
Thank you. You did an excellent job.
Thank you. I appreciate so much your being part of this program. And for folks who want to learn more about Catherine and Catherine's work, her website is gatekeeperconstellations.com. And that's just what it sounds like, GATEKEEPER. CONSTELLATIONS. www.healingwithkathleen.com. And, of course, we'll have a link for that as well.
And then we also have gifts of healing if anybody is interested. It's a free gift, so on our landing page. So they can just
beautiful.
Go right to that website and then go to the gift.
Beautiful. Go get your gifts of healing. Absolutely. Okay, again, thank you so much, Catherine.
Thank you, and I wish you well, and thank you for doing the beautiful deep work that you're doing.
Yes, and thank you for doing the work that you do as well.
Thank you.
Okay,
all right, take care. Bye.
Okay, well, folks, wow, what an amazing interview. I have learned so much here. I don't even know where to start here. So I asked her, but to start off by helping us out, what are systemic constellations? And she shared, well, that everything is systems. You know, it's like if the stars weren't in the right place, we'd be very confused. And so it's important that all our systems are working for our, you know, for our bodies, you know, that for our cells, for our organs. And if they're not, then we have disease. Well, in a group of people, in a family, if the systems aren't ordered in the right way, then we have discord. And so trauma can, in fact, be passed on through generations. And we carry that generation as if our own. For quite some time, she mentioned this number of 14 generations. She brought up epigenetics, this memory of our cells. So things that could be traumatic, like adoption or abuse, or cultural things like systemic racism, that these are beliefs that get passed on, these traumas that get unresolved, and you know, actually become, in a sense, genetic. Addiction, anger, and rage, these are all energetic as well as cellular level things. And so if it's not resolved within the generation, then history will repeat itself, and it keeps reenacting itself until there's resolution. And I asked her to clarify the term epigenetics, and she shared this comes from Bruce Lipton's, the stem cell biologist, particularly in his book, The Biology of Belief, but also in his work, finding not only does the mind affect ourselves, but that also means that we are not necessarily limited to our genetic fate, that we can turn genes on and off by our perception of how we do things. So she shared that somebody with, for example, who might be in something serious like a stage 4 cancer, you know, that maybe this is triggered from some grief or trauma, that they can do deep healing emotional work, and something can shift for them, depending on how far along things are at that point. But there's a definite shift. And several times she brought up that, in fact, in our culture, we have unresolved trauma and grief. She talked about doing ancestral meditations where, that in fact, we are our fathers and our mothers, and this is part of our genetic code. We become attached to the story of who we are, at least the story that we tell ourselves. And she shared, this is really fascinating to me, that more than 80% of our issues are systemic issues, not psychological issues. So that shares a whole lot of trying to fix ourselves if we can identify those proper issues. That, in fact, you know, we often carry things forward, but our parents did the best they could, perhaps not in the fullness of who they really truly are for various reasons. But, you know, when the child starts becoming the parent, already it's affecting, you know, situations and structures. So she talks about putting down burdens through ceremony. She's also a shamanic practitioner. And so helping people walk between the worlds in this way. She mentioned this dichotomy between the ego and the soul, you know, working at her level, she works primarily with the soul because the soul has us, we don't have it. There is just so much here. talks about, you know, sometimes people coming back from war, they have a lot of frustration with, you know, their fallen comrades or how people have been treated, and that those are these kinds of situations or institutions can end up being put before families, and then that causes more trauma within the family. She mentioned Peter Levine's work, and he noted that, you know, animals who experience the trauma or some sort of post-traumatic stress tend to shake it off. We, however, humans tend to freeze, we become immobile, but we can instead learn to really touch our true resourcefulness. In fact, we were, I shared some of my experiences and asked this question, and she affirmed that, in fact, when we heal ourselves, we also heal those who came before. There's an energetic shift and if we just keep pushing our shadow away, that's never going to be successful. By bringing it closer, we can bring the gift of it. She mentioned that her shamanic teacher mentioned that, you know, every time she works, she remembers that those before who came before her are behind her. And that gives her a tremendous support system. A lot of this reminded me of the hero's journey of the son redeeming the father and overcoming obstacles that are meant to help, not get in our way. And Catherine shared, you know, the often phrase that the sins of the father are visited on the son. And she shared this interesting story about Bert Hellinger, who, riffing off the work of Virginia Satir, he was a Jesuit priest who came up with the term systemic constellations, and talked about this relationship between the victim and the perpetrator, that, you know, when the victim can be free, it frees the perpetrator as well. Catherine told this powerful story of Mennonites whose children were murdered, and they went to the funeral of the murderer who was shot at the scene. So she said, when the whole thing is to come out of the shadows, when we can be public, when we can be seen, when we can validate, if we can bring these ill feelings to light, she's really stressed that we're at a pivotal time in our culture on the globe that can really be empowering, that can really resolve traumas, and that when we can forgive, we can be free. We talked about the Sufi saying, you know, is there love even here, you know, even in dark times? She talked about missing the energy of people who have gone. And then talked about the courage. I asked her, how can we really step forward? And she says, well, the main thing is courage. It takes courage to be ourselves, that to recognize where we have remorse, where we have guilt, where our behaviors don't serve us anymore, where we can do some self-forgiveness, where we can have compassion for ourselves and others, and to shine a light on our shame, on our amnesia, on our gifts of healing. That she shared Eckhart Tolle's saying that we don't have problems, we just have situations. I love that. Really remember that we have opportunities for transparency, that, you know, that we really can learn that we're safe, in a safe context, that, you know, yes, working with a practitioner, but the goal here is really our own liberation, that we're not being punished, we're being unveiled, we're being, you know, taught, we're being healed. She mentioned Michael Brown. He said often that people talk about the mind-body connection and often the emotion is left out, and talked about the progression in sevens, as, you know, from children to the fear from 7 to 14, to from the anger to 15 to 20, and then and how this, you know, gets manifested physically. And then we were talking about how things flow from the mental, that this is really the deep work. You know, at some point, you know, we have to realize that we are now the adults in the room. I asked her how we can help bring up these things that are unconscious. And she said, well, the main thing to do is to slow down. When we slow down, we'll still be doing them, but we can start to notice, gosh, what am I doing? I thought I was on a diet and I'm reaching for a cookie. Isn't that interesting? We can catch ourselves. And I shared that this is part of the more advanced meditation work, that sometimes we can work with folks. So really shifting what can be a focus on the self to a focus on the family, on community, on generations, on ancestors. It really opened my eyes and had shifted my perspective, and I hope it has yours as well. For more information about Catherine Van Wetter and her work, you can go to gatekeeperconstellations.com, GATEKEEPERCONSTELLATIONS.com. And you go to our website, there are some free healing gifts there as well. So you want to go over and take advantage of those. Well, thanks for listening. It was an amazing interview, and we'll connect next time. Take care now. Bye-bye.